Welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Then said he unto him, A certain man made a great supper, and bade many, and sent his servant at supper time to say to them that were bidden, Come, for all things are now ready. And they all with one consent began to make excuse. The first said unto him, I have bought a piece of ground, and I must needs go and see it. I pray thee, have me excused. And another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to prove them. I pray, have me excused. And another said, I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. So that servant came and showed his lord these things. Then the master of the house began to be angry, and said unto his servant, Go out quickly into the streets and the lanes of the city, and bring in the hither the poor, the maimed, and the halt, and the blind. And the servant said, Lord, it is done as thou hast commanded, and yet there is room. The Lord said unto the servant, Go out into the highways and hedges, and compel them to come in, that my house may be filled. For I say unto you, that none of those men which were bidden shall taste of my supper. Luke 14:16-24. Those who are often absent from the worship need this lesson as much as any, probably more than those who attend. But that is usually true of any sermon. Friend, if you've been baptized into Christ, then you are the one who can profit from this lesson. Brethren in the Lord, like alien sinners, often deceive themselves by offering excuses for not doing as they ought. Now, we're very much aware of the excuses people give for not becoming Christians, are we not? But are we as aware of some of the excuses that we are guilty of making for not being the kind of Christian we're supposed to be? We recognize that there is a difference between a reason and an excuse. We're quite willing to let God be the judge as to what is the real reason behind something and what may be just another human excuse. The principle we want to consider can be applied to Christian duties, but we're going to focus attention on the responsibility to attend the services of worship. Let us be fully convinced that worship is a duty. Possibly some do not think it necessary to worship God. But the early church attended to matters of worship steadfastly, Acts 2 and verse 42. Observance of the memorial to Christ, the Lord's Supper, is a command, 1 Corinthians chapter 11. Hebrews 10 and 25 makes it clear that we are not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together. If we intend to pattern our religion after the New Testament revelation, we will be present every occasion that is possible for us to attend. It has never really been considered a serious thought that Christians would want anything less than worshiping God with brethren when the time of the worship services arise. We never heard of a faithful Christian wanting to be absent. But absenteeism is one of the dominant traits of some brethren. When those who are haphazard and spasmodic, sort of now and then, and irregular in their attendance are approached, they often have some kind of remark similar to the ones I want to mention. And if they are not just excuses, they have every characteristic of one. There are real reasons sometimes why a person cannot be present, but they are scarce. Like being ill or caring for the sick, uncontrollable emergencies or even transportation problems that could not be avoided. But when a person is generally able to do almost everything else he sets out to do, but misses worship, and then makes comments such as we're going to note, we cannot be far wrong to declare that they are not facing the real reason, but are simply making excuses. Some might say, I do the best I can, and if this be so, nobody could do more. But we want to be sure that this is not just a cover for us. God has never expected anything we cannot do, and when we do our best, our attendance will not be splotchy and at random. Faithfulness is expected, and very likely we're not doing the best we can when absenteeism is so frequent. One might say, I'm no worse than other brethren. You know, some prove themselves unwise by comparing themselves with themselves or with others. Paul says that making this kind of comparison is not wise, 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 12. We're not to be judged according to what others do anyway. So often when people like to compare themselves with others in the church, they will select someone who's weak, possibly a known hypocrite, and alongside them they may not look quite so bad. But did it ever occur to us that we may compare favorably with somebody else and they are not acceptable either? We might look good, but that might not mean we're acceptable to God. Our standard is Jesus Christ. There is always the possibility that more is expected of us than somebody else with whom we might want to make comparison. Even if we're not worse than other brethren, we still may be far short of what God is expecting from us. Well, one says, I keep part of God's law, probably the larger part of it at that. Well, since when did we assume the right to declare some of God's will important and the rest to be optional? It is quite presumptuous to tell God that there are certain portions of His law that we do not have to obey. There is a principle stated in James 2 and verse 10 that we need to have before us just now. For whosoever shall keep the whole law and yet offend in one point, he is guilty of all. Now, this does not mean that if one steals, he's also guilty of lying or adultery. It means, however, if one violates the law in any point, he's guilty of violating the law. To violate God's law on any point is to challenge His authority and His right to command us. While it may be easy to see that the immediate consequences of violating one law is not as serious as violating another, who are we to tell God that we have ranked His laws according to what we consider important? Violating what we think is a minor point is serious. We cannot pacify ourselves by thinking we are acceptable just because we have done a goodly portion of our duty while neglecting the rest. But one might say, but I do not like the preacher, or an elder, or a teacher, or somebody else that attends there. That is often the reason behind absenteeism. But we are very charitable in calling it a reason. It is more of an excuse. We do not attend worship because we like other people. We attend worship to worship God. Of course, if there is no fellowship between you, that's another matter. Personality differences, likes and dislikes, give us no justification for taking our feelings out on God, staying away, refusing to obey His command to worship. We all have people we like more than others. This is natural. But keep in mind that any preacher who is doing his duty is not there to please people anyway, but to teach God's word. Worship, including the preaching portion, is not some kind of popularity contest. It is not to entertain. It is to teach the will of God. And when a preacher is doing that, he deserves your support. We seriously doubt we would take such an attitude in other matters of life. If your house was on fire, would you deny the fireman the right to put it out for you because you did not like the fireman or maybe some of his fellows? Would you refuse to let a doctor perform an operation that you needed because you did not like his wife? We have no right to expect perfection out of others any more than they have a right to expect it out of us. But none of us have the right to take the matter out on God by refusing to worship, using other people as an excuse. Probably the most trifling excuse that so often is heard, I just can't seem to get up in time. I was too tired. Now, it's absolutely true that you are too tired if you are too tired to obey God. Whatever you have been doing that gets you so tired shall come to a halt when it begins to interfere with your service to God. Some just stay up or stay out too late on Saturday night to be able to give the attention to their soul. It's very doubtful that any brother or sister would be too tired to get up if $1,000 bills were going to be given to every person attending. They would not be too tired to get up then. So the claim of being too tired is just an invalid excuse. You see, friend, the problem is a spiritual one. It is a disease of the heart, not the body. We get up and we go to our jobs day after day, on time, whether tired or not, because that means money. We might do better if we just admitted that we lack love for God, and that we are endangering our souls by our indifference, rather than trying to soothe our consciences with something that we all know is not really the truth. We know that we are expected to worship come Lord's Day morning and evening. Why do we not make plans for it? Make sure nothing hinders, rather than run ourselves around late into the night and then cry, "Too tired." It is a lame excuse. But how many times have people offered for an excuse not attending, or we had company, or we were expecting company? My dear listener, this smacks of hypocrisy about as badly as any of the excuses. It is an admission that even though you profess to be a Christian, Christ is not first in your life. Somebody who wants to come and visit you, taking first place over Christ, and Christ is shuttled aside for that week? Surely not. There is work to be done when company comes, yes. But who should wait? Should Christ be set aside for the benefit of the company? You say you don't want to be rude, but you are being rude toward Christ. Yes, you may have to cook dinner for them, but let them wait until after worship. What sort of example are you setting before others when you let company keep you absent from a sacred duty? Either bring your company with you or let them wait, but do not show them that Christ is not important to you. You could make better arrangements if you really tried. Some even try to excuse themselves on the basis that their clothes are not good enough. This is seldom the excuse with most brethren, because most have reasonably good clothes. But it is heard at times. Are you telling God that He has not blessed you enough for you to worship Him? The clothes you wear are not as important as the kind of heart that you have. Does it not strike you as strange that some who say their clothes are not good enough to attend worship will be seen in public all week long in those same clothes and never feel shame about it? It makes you wonder why the proud act only comes at the hour of worship. We would do better to strive for heaven wearing rags than to go to hell in a brand new suit. If clothing is truly lacking, brethren will provide it. One cannot justify his disobedience on that excuse. Now, transportation is sometimes a problem, but not one that cannot be easily remedied when there is a desire to remedy it. The fact that some do not drive is no excuse. Others drive and are happy to come get you. Oh, but I don't want to be a bother to anyone. First, let me say it is no bother, but it is a privilege to assist another to come to worship. And secondly, I'd rather bother my brother than forsake a duty to God. Most congregations have three or four times the transportation that's needed anyway. And people do not mind bothering others for rides to other places. You know, Zacchaeus was a man who had some trouble getting to see the Lord. He had a handicap, but he did not let that stop him. We should not let obstacles like transportation hinder us. But one might say, I can't get there because I have to work. Now, what we shall say here will not set well with some. Work schedules are often in conflict with periods of worship. But we're also aware that few are required to work to such an extent that they cannot attend sometimes during the Lord's Day. Some work because they're asked to work and they like that extra pay. They do not even try to make other arrangements. We have seen brethren make such efforts to avoid these conflicts, that we are certain that many times it can be done. Furthermore, nobody can make you work so as to miss everything. But some deliberately take jobs when they know it will be a hindrance to worship. Have you ever really tried to get off from Sunday work? If the ones for whom you work are so inconsiderate of you as a person, and inconsiderate of your faith, it may be that you will have to decide between your job and your faith. Brethren have to take these things into consideration when taking a job. We're reasonably sure that 99% could make it at one service. By the way, offering the Lord's Supper on Sunday night was never intended to accommodate those who were deliberately absent on Sunday morning. That is to abuse the purpose of it. Well, someone says, to tell the truth, I miss a lot because the services are not very interesting. Now, this is possibly true at times, but we must remember why we have come. It is not to be entertained. We are there to give, not just to receive, and I'm not just speaking of money. We are there to worship and honor God according to the teaching of His Word. Some have the idea of getting and never giving. One time a lady said she did not get anything out of the worship to take home with her, and one told her quite bluntly that possibly she did not bring very much in which to take it home. The fault may well be with the worshiper, not with the worship. But one says, I do not come because things are not run to suit me and I don't like it. Well, things have to be run, and they have to be run by somebody. And whoever does it will not go to please everybody. Elders of a congregation have that responsibility. And what is it you dislike? Is there something biblically wrong that's going on? Or is it your opinion versus the opinion of the leadership? We have to submit to our leaders in matters of judgment unless there is a matter of conscience involved. Possibly those in charge are not even aware of your dissatisfaction, and even if they are, you go to worship God not to show favor to human opinion. We would not encourage one to worship where error is tolerated and promoted, to be sure. But just because one may not like the way matters of judgment are run is no reason for disobeying God. We can draw a conclusion or two from all of this. Just remember that God does not accept excuses when He has given us a task to perform. He never has. He does not ask what we cannot do and will hold us responsible when we shirk our duty. Let us not deceive ourselves, dear friend, in thinking that we can sidestep God by offering excuses instead of offering sincere worship. The next time you have temptation to miss the worship assembly, just consider how God looks at what you are doing. It will likely urge you to get on your way, and you will be glad that you decided to be present. This has been A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.